And a very good Monday morning to you. It's time to get political, a little controversial, talk about current events, history, and all that fun stuff that is currently weaving its way around the minds of Americans like myself. And we call this show a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Adam, of course, is I, Adam Lepp, also the computer guy. I have several monikers here at the station, but I'm joined with Dr. Ron Feinman, live from his domicile in southern Florida. Ron, thank you again for being with us on the program.
Very happy to be here, Adam. It's a nice day here.
Always a pleasure to share our microphones with you on this nice warm spring day. We are commemorating the 25th anniversary of the passing of President Richard E. Nixon. And, you know, Nixon, like many presidents and many politicians, Ron, a bit of an enigma. He was considered a genius in things like foreign policy, but, of course, Watergate sort of did him in. And if there weren't Watergate, he might very well be considered maybe one of our top five presidents. He was a genius by many people's accounts in foreign policy. He was an environmentalist. He started the EPA. Earth Day also being celebrated today. And he had a presidential nature about him. You knew he was in charge. So many good things about President Nixon, or Tricky Dicky, as we call him sometimes. But with Watergate, you know, he took a rapid nosedive and was forced to resign or possibly become impeached. And it kind of happens, you know, Ron, politicians get into power and they're never really the same person. And you kind of make that reality check. Someone becomes president, how is he or she going to change? And we look at Donald Trump the same way. We knew the guy was certainly one who says what's on his mind. He can be out there. But did that change with him being president? I would say it became more pronounced, but a lot of his mannerisms aren't overly surprising. But, of course, some of the moves that he's made, again, all the staff turnover, et cetera, his rhetoric, I think it's probably surprised a few people. But as we've talked about, Ron, love him or hate him, Donald Trump has really piqued the interest in politics and history and current events of Americans. I've certainly always been interested in presidents and politics, but never as much as I have over the last couple of years. Now, granted, associating with you and being at the station has had a lot to do with it, but the Trump presidency, that really has been the icing on the cake, and I see that as a good thing. You know, some presidents, like both Bushes, really weren't the most interesting in the world. Not that they weren't necessarily good presidents or good men, but they didn't spark people's interest like the Donald does. And as I said, regardless of what you think of the guy, he certainly has been good. You know, for your business, you've had more of your students become interested in history and the presidency, and it's caused people to have dialogue, and that's what that's what it's about in this country. Get involved. It's your country. We're a country of its people, and I think being involved, being interested citizens is kind of the way to go. But
I agree.
But again, you know, notwithstanding what you might think about Donald Trump. Anyway, Dr. Feinman has joined us over 100 times on this station with me and with the interviewer to the stars. Of course, that would be Scott Spears. He writes a blog, which he has done for the last 10 years, called theprogressiveprofessor.com. We encourage you as a listener to visit that website frequently, to bookmark it, make it a favorite, all that good stuff. In addition to writing his blog, Dr. Feinman also frequently publishes articles for History News Network. And he had an article published yesterday, again, about presidents, not surprisingly, as he is the expert in that. Title of the article, We Judge Presidents in Part by Who Precedes and Follows Them. And we're going to talk about that in the first segment of the show, but I do want to let folks know that I've become semi-famous, or maybe notorious, from the first paragraph of that article. And Ron, you write, I've been interested in the presidency since I was 10 years old. Now, when you were 10, Ron, was Lincoln president, or was John Adams president? Who was president when you were 10 years old?
Eisenhower was president when I was 10 years old.
So did you wear one of those I Like Ike buttons, or did Mr. and Mrs. Feynman wear one of those buttons?
No, actually, because they were Democrats who liked Adlai Stevenson, who was the opponent of Eisenhower in 1952 and 56. And Stevenson is the first person I remember being talked about in the household.
Now,
he was the intellectual. He was, he came across as a very elitist intellectual type, a person who spoke so well that most people couldn't understand what he was saying.
Now, under Eisenhower, Tricky Dickey was vice president. So Richard Nixon has had a large impact on your interest in the presidency, seeing him as a vice president and then as president. Did you follow the presidency and politics enough, Ron, when you were 10 years old to form an opinion about Tricky Dickey as the vice president?
Well, yes, I knew that Nixon was very smart and very talented, but already he had, of course, made communism the issue that got him noticed in the late 1940s when he was a House member. And therefore, you know, liberals and Democrats hated him, and Stevenson was always attacking him, and Nixon was always attacking Stevenson of being soft on communism. So it was a lot of, a lot of nasty rhetoric. And, of course, people made fun of Stevenson, calling him an egghead, which is a new word at that time, meaning an intellectual. And I've always said, I have no problem with being called an egghead, but it was originally seen as an insult back then.
So Tricky Dickey's had an impact in your interest in the presidency from the time that you were a schoolboy until you were a young adult.
I've always said that Nixon is the president had the greatest impact on the second half of the 20th century, more than anybody after FDR, all the way through to 2000. No president had as much of an impact. In office and out of office,
even more than Reagan with Perestroika, and
I would say more, because Nixon dominated us from 1946 when he first came to the House until he died in 1994, a full half century minus 2 years. Even out of office, he was influential. He affected future presidents, giving them advice on foreign policy.
Right, that would be.
Age of Nixon is what we call the second half of the 20th century in America.
Right, and that's a good point, Ron, is when Reagan left office, he already had the early stages of Alzheimer's, and he kind of went into retirement and seclusion. Versus Carter,
yes.
40 years after his presidency, he's still around. He still has an influence. And Nixon, until he passed away, he had an influence and was considered
20 years of retirement Nixon had, yes.
Yeah, an elder statesman, despite Watergate, where he didn't condone it, and his buddies got away with things they shouldn't have. And yes, the ultimate blame is on the man sitting in the Oval Office. And it's really a shame. Without, you take away Watergate, Nixon, very well, he could be up there with both Roosevelts, with Washington, with Jefferson, with Lincoln as just a great president. So it's just, again, he's such an enigma. It is so hard to judge the guy. Where do you draw that line? And do we disqualify any of his good things because of his, out of lack of a better term, crooked nature?
And, I've always thought about him both pro and con. I've always been very clear about the fact that there were definite positives with Nixon, but that the negatives, unfortunately, weighed very heavily on him.
It's just a shame that people get into power and they let that ability to control get the best of them. And hopefully we can learn. Donald Trump could probably use a few lessons in that. But give the guy credit. Coming into office with no elected political office experience, he's been able to perform the job, and how well he's performed it, what he's done in terms of policies and hiring of staff members, that's a different matter. But he's still in office. And even you, Ron, thought that he wouldn't last as long as he has. So he has surprised.
No, nobody really thought he would, but it looks like he might very well last the term, but might very well face impeachment, although not conviction. I think there's still a good chance he will face impeachment in the House.
But as I said, Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he has really sparked people's interest in presidency and history and politics. And to me, that's a good thing. Anyway, in that article, Ron, you can talk about being interested in the presidency since you were a 10-year-old. You were little Ronnie. On WWGH 107.1 FM, which I believe is the station that I'm at, in Marion, home of Warren G. Harding, I comment weekly on political events, and the host, Adam Lepp, who I hear is very good-looking and very smart, has granted me a title that really does not exist, although I think it should be a word. Presidentologist, and You know, maybe I should write to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary because, you know, every year they add words that have become commonplace. A selfie is an example of a word that no one used 10 years ago, but now seems to be one of the most common words in the world. Maybe I should write to them and say that presidentologist should be included. And, the you know, like a poet laureate. You know, we have a poet laureate, and you're the official presidentologist. And maybe I'll write to the dictionary people and talk about that. Well, in this article,
I'll tell you, I would definitely support you in that. It'd be wonderful to be able to use the word and know it's a real word.
In addition to talking about my claim to fame or my notoriety, might be a better word, you speak about how the presidents are ranked. And, you know, I look at the analogy with songs, as many times a song will be at number one because there really was nothing holding it back. And sometimes there's a number one song that is so powerful. An example would be some of Michael Jackson's songs, Beat It and Billie Jean from his tremendous album Thriller, and the album itself for that matter, that those songs being number one and being so popular in the video, and back then where videos were in their infancy, the popularity of the videos of the album of the music kept other very worthwhile songs out of number one. So you can't just look at a song's ranking on the chart to see how popular and how much of an impact it had. And presidents are similar. A president will be a victim or benefactor of circumstance based upon who precedes him or who succeeds him. We look at the current example. Many people feel, and as you do, Ron, that Donald Trump is one of our worst presidents. But Barack Obama suddenly looks a lot better. His ranking has improved because he preceded Donald Trump. And he also succeeded someone who isn't thought of as one of our worst presidents, but was below average, George Bush number two, or George W. Bush. And that has really helped out Obama. And we don't know what will happen if Trump will have a second term and maybe he'll become more popular. Who knows? But that will affect the ranking of the president who is sandwiched between two presidents who might not be ranked very well. And we'll bring up one of the best examples, Ron. I mean, Abraham Lincoln. We talk about him regularly. You know, everybody I know says he's at least, you know, one of the top five presidents. And many people say he's the best. He certainly was innovative, being instrumental in ending slavery and doing many other things. But, of course, like all presidents, he had some controversy. And that's part of the office. Spark people's interest, stir the pot up a little bit. But obviously, Lincoln did things that were controversial. Again, there, as we've talked about, many people in the South don't think highly of him as you and I do. But everybody knows who he is, and people generally know that he delivered the Emancipation Proclamation, as well as many other great things. But he also is benefiting by the fact that he is, I guess, sandwiched between two very bad presidents, two of our worst presidents, Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan. But do you think, Ron, if Lincoln were to be sandwiched in the middle of two presidents who are better, would that make a difference? Would he be the undisputable number one? Or how does that kind of fit into the picture of how people, historians like yourself, feel about Lincoln?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the events of the time you govern and how you handle them. And Johnson did not handle it well after him, and Buchanan did not handle it well before Lincoln. So I guess it would have depended. If Buchanan or Johnson had been better, maybe Lincoln would not look as good in history. But he really has two disastrous presidents around him, so that really helps. And I think that's basically the same with Obama as well. And to a lesser extent, for Jefferson, being between John Adams, not terrible, but worse than him, and James Madison, who had the War of 1812 and the burning of the White House and the Capitol building. So I think even Jefferson looks better compared, although not as extreme, you know, between Adams, John Adams, and Madison, but more so with Lincoln between Buchanan and Johnson, and of course Obama between George W. Bush and Trump.
We talked about that Andrew Johnson was his vice president and became presidency after Lincoln was assassinated. And I, as I asked you on a previous show, why would a president so great, Lincoln, choose a vice president who was so bad and ended up becoming one of our worst presidents? And you mentioned about his wife, Mary Lincoln. who wasn't
Mary
fond.
Lincoln hated Hannibal Hamlin, who was the first term vice president, and Lincoln was worried about whether he could win re-election running against General George McClellan, the general who he fired from the Civil War leadership and who was the Democratic opponent. So he picked a Southern war Democrat, Andrew Johnson, who was a white supremacist and a racist and was really a disastrous president, faced impeachment and trial, although found not guilty. The belief is Hannibal Hamlin would have been better, but Mary Todd Lincoln hated Hannibal Hamlin, so he was dropped from the ticket for the second term, and Johnson only was in office 6 weeks, and he became president. But if it had been earlier, it would have been President Hannibal Hamlin, and in my assassinations book, I explain how his life record makes it seem clear that he would have been a much better president, and certainly was a much more accomplished person than Andrew Johnson.
And we've talked about, Ron, in modern times, the first ladies had an influence. So we talk about Hillary Clinton almost being like the real vice president of Bill Clinton, not more so than the actual vice president being Al Gore. But many, many recent presidents, we've seen the first lady have an influence, possibly more than was imagined during their time in office.
Nancy Reagan did not like the chief of staff under her husband in the second term, Donald Regan. Same person, same spell, not the same spelling, R-E-G-A-N, not R-E-A-G-A-N. Donald Regan, she did not like, and she had him fired. She made her husband fire him. So, I mean, that's an example of a first lady intervening when she thought someone was not there for her husband. And some of these first ladies are very outspoken in, you know, letting their husbands know how they feel.
So, well before women's lib, even women couldn't even vote back then, but it seems like the first lady has been powerful, which is kind of interesting. Just interesting tidbits in history that we...
Well, also, I wanted to point out, first ladies could speak up on issues that the husband couldn't speak up on. Eleanor Roosevelt, for instance, spoke up about civil rights and all that, and the Southern Democrats were upset, and they'd ask him about it, because he never touched the subject in public, and he would say, well, can you control your wife? and they all laughed it off, because the argument is, can you tell your wife what she can say? And almost like saying, it's not my fault, she said it. But meanwhile, she promoted things that he could not safely, he felt, do. And I think other presidents have done the same thing. They've let their wives speak out ahead of them, such as Betty Ford on abortion rights and on the Equal Rights Amendment, which failed. She spoke out, and he kept quiet, and same with Barbara Bush with George H.W. Bush. So I think the first ladies, you don't really say anything against them in public, and they can sort of like put ideas out there that the presidents feel unsafe to do.
Now, you talk about how Buchanan and Johnson, again, more ironies. There are about a half a dozen ironies in this one paragraph alone. They had more governmental experience than Lincoln, yet Lincoln is considered by some to be the greatest president. Certainly everybody I know puts him at least in the top five. You know, I would say him or Theodore Roosevelt or George Washington. I mean, pick the top one, but those are the top three as far as I'm concerned.
And FDR also is up there, yeah.
But he had less governmental experience, which might sound good for Donald Trump.
It's like, he had one term in the House of Representatives and a couple of terms in the state legislature. Buchanan held positions for 30 years, all kinds of positions, and Johnson and many. They're two of the most experienced in years in office of any of our presidents, but they're both disasters.
I mean, maybe that, again, more ironies is good or bad for Donald Trump. It's like, well, Abraham Lincoln didn't have a lot of governmental experience. Donald Trump had none, but he had lots of business experience. So does that mean governmental experience? Is that not necessarily a prerequisite? Well, kind of hard to say. And we look at Mayor Pete.
I would say this. Yeah. Joe Biden is going to be announcing this week. He's got tons of government experience, and that should be a plus. But maybe some people think he has too much government experience.
I mean,
he doesn't understand, quote, the real world, end quote.
Yeah.
That may be what may happen. We don't know how he's going to be reacted to by voters. We have no idea.
People say, do we want professional politicians? And in Ohio, we had two professional politicians running against each other for governor. DeWine won. And again, we don't like his policies. I can think of a couple in particular I am rather repulsed by. But I do respect his long record of service to Ohio and national and statewide offices. And Cordray, also a bit of a professional politician. John Kasich, who we think may be a presidential candidate. Ron and I agree he would definitely be a good choice as a very moderate Republican.
Yes.
Who's not afraid to moderate his views based upon what he feels is the right thing to do. He's been a news commentator. Again, he's had multiple offices. And he's kind of hanging out now, and we'll see exactly what he plans on doing. I don't think we've seen the end of Mr. Kasich. So do we want professional politicians, someone like, again, both DeWine and Cordray here in Ohio as the gubernatorial candidates, or do we want somebody with a little bit of experience? Example would be Mayor Pete as a presidential candidate. You know, Lincoln, again, didn't have a lot of government experience, but he certainly was well known for what he did as president. But the two presidents, the bookends, so to speak, the before and after, they're considered two of our worst presidents, but they had a lot of experience. So, I mean, who knows? You really don't know what happens when the ballots are counted and a new president enters the Oval Office. But one thing we can agree is the current president is very colorful, very controversial. And again,
yes.
Love him or hate him. Love him or hate him. He has caused people to get interested in current events, in past events, in the news, in the election, and that's a good thing. Doesn't matter what you think about the guy, he has piqued people's interest, and that's a good thing. I've talked about how both Bushes were kind of boring. Not that they weren't good men and didn't do many good things as president. They just weren't that interesting and didn't really cause people to take an interest in this great country. And I'm not really faulting them for that, but that is a point of note. But with Trump, everybody has an opinion. Everybody is interested, and certainly myself. Now, doing this show helps, but I can assure you, Donald Trump being in office has greatly influenced my role as an active American in the political process, and I see that as increasing.
That's good.
Definitely a good thing. Now, let's fast forward to recent history. George H.W. Bush served between, you say, two charismatic presidents, and I would agree, presidents with colorful personalities, Ronald Reagan and William Jefferson Clinton. He is rated lower by comparison. Reagan is ranked 9th, Clinton 15th in the latest C-SPAN poll, but Bush was 20th. And as we've talked about, I think you'd agree, Ron, George H.W. Bush was a good man, and we still mourn his recent passing and his beloved wife Barbara's recent passing. But he was kind of boring. And after the colorful administration of Reagan, it kind of made the office less interesting and people less interested in the news. But then with Clinton, it kind of perked up a little bit. And how does that affect his ranking? Well, I think it probably isn't too good for him, but it does help Reagan and Clinton. I mean, Reagan ranked 9th. That seems kind of high considering some of the things he did in office, which really weren't too great. But as a man, as somebody...
I think he's a little overrated, but that's how he's rated.
Somebody with great charisma, we give him points for that. We both love his sense of humor, both respect how much he loved his country, and as being a great leader, and being presidential, something we've talked about that Donald Trump probably could take a lesson in. But in terms of policies, 9th is kind of generous. Clinton, you know, he had his indiscretions, as we've talked about, including things we don't really want to talk about on this family show. But from an economic standpoint, I mean, his fairly conservative economic policies and progressive people policies, those were good. And I think all in all, if you don't mind his indiscretions as a man, he was a pretty good president. And, you know, 15th, that's up for debate, but it does put him in about the top third percentile. So we shall see.
I want to point out, though, as a Democrat, he is below many other presidents. He's below FDR, he's below Truman, below Kennedy, below Johnson, and also below Obama, 12th. So that's interesting. And he's only above Carter of the modern Democratic presidents. And also Wilson is 11th. You know, so I'm just saying, so actually, he has 7 Democrats above him. So if you look at Democratic presidents, he's actually not rated very well, Clinton.
I mean, ranking is a relative thing, Ron. Same thing happens in music. There are many songs that were kept out of the number one position because a big hit. I mean, Michael Jackson's Thriller album. Yeah, multiple big hits from that album. The album itself and these singles. And the two big ones, Billie Jean and Beat It, kept many very powerful songs out of the number one spot. So you don't just look at the pure ranking. You look at... look at the song's impact, like you look at the president's impact. But yeah, you are a victim of circumstance or a benefactor of circumstance. And as you write toward the end of the article, Barack Obama is certainly a benefactor of circumstance, being ranked at number 12. People look at him versus Trump, and I'm not sure you could consider two more different presidents. as I've talked about how I witnessed Carter giving way to Reagan. Two very different presidents, but that can't hold a candle to the difference between Obama and Trump.
You're right.
And it's going to cause people's interest in history and politics and this great country, interest to be piqued, and that's a good thing. Again, love him or hate him, people are taking an interest in where they live, and that's a very good thing and something that I think we should embrace, and hopefully, regardless of who wins, that continues. But we shall see.
Well, one thing I'll say, among many of the Democrats, whether one likes them or not, I think a lot of them are exciting and dynamic, not too many boring candidates. I think any one of them probably would be fascinating and interesting, would not be as dull as, say, a Bush would be as far as personality. I think many of them, even if you don't like them, are so like interesting personalities.
Yeah, I mean,
Pete,
Biden is probably
Beto,
the...
Even Warren, even Sanders, who you don't like, I think is an interesting character. You can't say he's boring. And quite a few others. It's an interesting group as far as personality.
Yeah. I mean, Biden certainly is probably the least interesting. Plus, he seems like he's been around forever. And I'm thinking maybe the hair-smelling photos, that was something he did on purpose, just to make him seem interesting. Because compared to Mayor Pete, compared to Pocahontas, that is Elizabeth Warren, Klobuchar, whose name is also pronounced in a way that we're not going to say again on this family show.
Some people you give it a different name because of the way she treats her staff, yes.
Yes, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. Again, he doesn't seem that interesting compared to any of those people. So I think he tried to stir the pot by smelling hair. Maybe he should be in like one of those hairspray commercials. I don't know. But I think Cory Booker is safe since he doesn't have any hair. I don't think Joe would want to smell his hair, along with, of course, Jeff Bezos, we've talked about. Neither of those gentlemen, they can both mark themselves on Facebook as being safe from having their hair smelled by Joe Biden because they don't have any.
Yeah, I must say again, though, Mayor Pete has surged to third and a strong third in these polls lately, the most recent polls. He's really surging. Whether it'll last, we don't know, but he's just behind Biden first and Sanders second. He's very close to both of them. But, of course, this is early, and if you went by 2007, Rudy Giuliani was going to be the Republican nominee. You know, and we can come up with so many other times when the front runner ends up being a real disaster. So there's really no way to know at this point.
But the question remains, Ron. You know what the most important question is? Do you know what the most important question is about Mayor Pete?
Well, first of all, that he's the youngest. He would be the youngest president. And also, will his sexuality become an issue enough to cause his downfall? Because there's a lot of evangelical right-wing Christians who are really going after him now. So the question is, will they have the effect that they want to destroy his candidacy? I don't know. But I think the fact that he's a gay person who's married, has a husband, is controversial to many people. Unfortunately, it is. But I think that's a reality. So that may weaken him, I guess. Plus his age.
Well, my question is, if Joe wants to smell his hair, would Chasten, his husband, get jealous? That's a big question. Do you think Chasten would let Joe Biden smell Pete's hair? Because Pete has a pretty nice head of hair.
Joe Biden could be his... Yeah. Could be his father. He'll be 78 and he would be 39. He could actually be his father, it's funny. That's the thing. If he's a running mate with anybody, almost any of them, even Klobuchar will be 60 when Pete's 39. So almost any of these people could be his own mother or father. That's what's so like funny about it.
Yeah, I guess that's the $10,000 question. But I guess we'll find out. Because, Pete has a very, very neat head of hair. It's not the most interesting hairstyle, but it's always combed perfectly. And maybe Bernie Sanders should take a lesson, because we have two very different hairstyles.
But one thing about Pete, he knows how to say things properly. He's really an exceptional communicator. He really comes across very well. And in fact, tonight on CNN from 7 to 12 on Monday night, the 22nd, they're going to have five town halls on CNN I'm not sure the exact order, but they're going to have Harris, Klobuchar, Warren, Sanders, and Pete. And 5 hours in a row, if you're willing to sit through it, all the town halls in D.C. So they'll all be almost like it's a debate among them all, although each of them is a separate hour. So that's going to be interesting if one can stick through it, of course.
That'll certainly be intriguing. You wrote in your blog yesterday, Ron, will Democrats go back to a white male presidential nominee after three times not doing so? And, I didn't even realize this, but the last three Democratic nominees have not been white males. We had Obama, and Hillary Rodham Clinton. So is that going to continue? Well, we shall see.
I don't know, but we have 10 potential white men. That could be, as I list in that article, you know, of course, some of them are not serious, but I mean, I'd say Joe, Bernie, Pete, Beto, and probably those four are the best bets. I'm not sure that any of the others would be a serious one of those four, but they're all doing well. They're all in the top six, along with Warren and Harris. They're the top six. So, I mean, I think the white men are certainly in the running.
It's an interesting point to ponder. And again, irony number 28 from this show, at least number 28, if Mayor Pete were to be the nominee, well, he's a white male, but he's another minority, which is actually more of a minority than being black is, or certainly female is not a minority per se, but it's when it comes to presidents, all presidents have been men. So if Mayor Pete were to be the nominee, that would...
He'd be the first Jewish candidate for president. Only Joe Lieberman was a vice presidential candidate who was Jewish. So that would, you know, he's not particularly religious, but he is Jewish, Bernie Sanders.
That would stir the pot, wouldn't it? So we'll see.
Yes.
And it bodes well for the Democrats. But what'll happen at the next election? And how will that add to the mix? What'll come up during debates? Do we want to have a president? We want to have a Congress that reflects the diversity of the country. Do we not look good because all presidents before Obama were white men, and still we've never had a female president? So that's something for scholars to talk about. As I see it, yes, I'd love to see a president who's not, so to speak, an old white guy, because most of our presidents have been. But that's to be the right person.
So we'll point out, if you talk about average age of a president, if you put all the 44 together, the average age is only about 55, 56 when they take the oath. That's why the few people now running that are much older, it really is so like amazing, because even Elizabeth Warren would be 71 if she took the oath. So, you know, the idea of having people in their 70s be nominees or becoming president is rare. The earlier times we had McCain and we had Dole, but they lost. But basically, we haven't had presidents over 70 except for Trump and Reagan as far as being elected at that time. That's the only two.
We have
I don't know. Average is in the mid-50s, really.
We have a diverse, to put it mildly, lot of people from the Democratic Party looking to take over the Oval Office. And no matter what happens, I think history will be made. And that's, again, made things more interesting. And I would think Donald Trump, again, who provides people with strong opinions, positive, negative, or, you know, mixed like a lot of people. People are getting more interested in government, and candidates are more inclined to run as they want change. So,
yes, I also want to point out there's three millennial contenders, not only Pete, but also Eric Swalwell, congressman from California, and Tulsi Gabbard, congresswoman from Hawaii, and they're all born in 80, 81, or 82. So it would be the first president born in the 1980s, and they would be Swalwell would be 40 and 2 months old, and Tulsi Gabbard 39 and about 9 months old, and Pete would be 39 years and 1 day old if they were to win. So they would all be younger than any president we've ever had, and all born in the 1980s.
Of course, as always seems to happen on this show, time flies. We only have about 7 minutes left, so I run out of time, let me pick a couple more topics. Again, talking with Dr. Ron Fineman from his domicile in southern Florida. He writes the blog theprogressiveprofessor.com. We talked about this last week, Ron, but we'll recapitulate it. I like that word, recapitulate. Didn't make that word up. That's an existing word, but I do like it. Anyway, today we commemorate the quarter century after the passing of Richard Milhouse Nixon. Also like that name, Milhouse.
On this day, April 22, 1994, yeah. And Earth Day also. It started in 1970, yes.
Now, Nixon, a bit like Clinton, if he didn't have one, can you say this on the air, screw up? I guess you can say that. If he didn't have one major screw up, he would be considered quite possibly, I would say, in the top 10 of presidents, maybe even in the top five. But unfortunately,
he had quite a few accomplishments. There's no question about it. Yes.
Unfortunately, he let his, I guess, his ego, his pride, and the fact that power tends to corrupt people, as we've talked about before, get the best of him. And we know what happened. He had a lot. Wasn't necessarily the mastermind behind Watergate, but he condoned it. his buddies were involved, and he certainly he's not the scapegoat. He deserved the blame, and he resigned because of an impending impeachment or other way of being removed from office. So a difficult decision had to be made by President Nixon, which really was a shame, because before Watergate, he was a very popular president. I know both of my parents were very fond of him. And he, you talk about being presidential, his presence, the way he spoke. I mean, it's like he was born to be president, including our joke.
He was very knowledgeable and very educated. He was one of the more knowledgeable presidents. And unfortunately, our president now is not. So he's very different in that regard. Nixon was brilliant, and he was a great student, and he really knew history and foreign policy very
well.
And,
you know, he was economic conservative, but in other things, moderate, which certainly fits a lot of my political philosophy. I think a bit like Kasich, almost like that, which I think is certainly what I like to see in a president. He was great for the environment with Earth Day. And we often think of environment as being more of a Democratic issue. But with Nixon, you know, Republican, he was one of our best environmental presidents. Compare that to some of the issues going on with Trump and also with Reagan.
Yes.
So,
yeah, by the way, are you aware that John Kasich, as a college student, met Richard Nixon in the White House?
I think I recall seeing that, yes.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting thing. He looked at him as a model. Of course, good side of him as a model.
Right.
And I think Kasich would have a lot of the same traits without the insecurity that Nixon had.
I think you'd agree, philosophically, they're rather similar. Economic, fiscal conservatives, but in people issues, moderate, and they're willing to change their beliefs based upon what they think is right, as Kasich used to be much more to the right on people-type issues than he was toward the end of his gubernatorial reign. And that's good. Any president needs to mold to what occurs in the world around us, and that's something.
Yeah,
Trump,
I want to point out that Nixon used wage and price control, something Republicans and conservatives never did. He did it from 71 to 74 because inflation was rising, and he tried to stop it, and he did stop it for that period with wage and price controls. But the argument is no Republican president would ever do it after him, and none has ever done it.
And foreign policy, again, Nixon was considered a genius, and foreign policy is a tough nut to crack. And again, Donald Trump probably could take some lessons from Nixon. Now, Donald Trump didn't he call up President Carter asking about China recently? I think we talked about that also.
Yes, he did. You know, it's interesting that the two men did talk. So it's good. I'm glad to hear that he has spoken to Carter. Yes. And, you know, and Carter is a man of wisdom, and I guess living as long as he has, 94-plus years, I think that sort of like adds to his stature. And I just wanted to mention before we leave, for people who are from Great Britain, yesterday, the 21st, was the 93rd birthday of Queen Elizabeth II. Can you believe this? Unbelievable. Yeah, and her husband's going to be 98 in June.
Well, we salute the Queen, 93, still looking pretty good. And let's hope she has many more years ahead. So before we close out, now, does Donald Trump have Jimmy Carter's home phone number? I mean, Carter's a pretty common name. Now, Plains, Georgia isn't very big. So how did he get Jimmy? Did he just call directly?
Well, I'm sure the White House has the phone numbers of all former presidents and all people who have been in government who are significant. I mean, how could they not have it?
Okay, I didn't know how that works. So
he has it, but the White House has it somehow.
Remember when Donald Trump took office, Ron? He said he really was intrigued by the White House phone system. Remember he said that? He really thought it was a cool phone system. Remember? So did he just?
Yes.
Did he pick up the phone and just call and say, "Hi, is Jimmy there?" And then. I'm not quite sure how that works. So does one of his assistants get
Then he says to someone, please get President Carter for me, and they can do within a few minutes, I'm sure.
Okay.
You know?
I wasn't sure how that works. So I just kind of thought about that as a point of interest. So we have like about 2 minutes left, Ron. Let's get into a controversial topic, but we can talk about this quickly. You probably heard about the removal of the Kate Smith statue at the Philadelphia Flyers stadium. And no longer playing her rendition of God Bless America because of her racist tendencies. What do you think about that?
Not in that, but in other things she sang, yes. But God Bless America is not racist itself.
No, not that song, but the person, but Kate Smith. And she sang racist songs and had some racist tendencies of her own. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't like that she had that, but honestly, I think God Bless America with Kate Smith is just fine. I see no reason. Of course, don't do the others, and you could certainly make a statement for history that what she did was wrong, but I don't think that takes away from the great rendition of God Bless America. So I think it's an overreaction in my mind.
So you and I would agree that we are not by any means condoning other aspects of Kate Smith's life, but sometimes political correctness gets a bit carried away. And this would be...
Look, Al Jolson, the famous person on Broadway, had blackface. So I guess maybe we should condemn Al Jolson, never mention him in culture either. I mean, there's a limit to how far you can go on this kind of thing. You can mention the criticism and not condone it, but you don't wipe out the whole memory of their positive contribution.
I would agree. Okay, well, food for thought, Ron. Thank you again for joining us on a fine mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor again. Time flies by when you're having fun, but that's a good thing. You have a great rest of your day. We will talk to you again on the next to last day of April. Have a good day.
Yes. Thanks again very much.